Today is Tuesday, the 12th of August, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Trump orders police military takeover of Washington, D.C. Patrick Martin, August the 11th, 2025. In his most brazen action yet to create a fascistic dictatorship in America, President Donald Trump declared a state of emergency in the District of Columbia, D.C., putting the Metropolitan Police Department under federal control, and mobilized nearly 1,000 soldiers in the D.C. National Guard to patrol the city. On the pretext of a, quote, crime wave in the city, Trump's latest big lie, he is putting the U.S. Capitol under military rule. Monday morning, Trump signed an executive order putting Attorney General Pam Bondi in charge of the D.C. police. She in turn named Terry Cole, head of the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, a unit of the Federal Department of Justice, the DOJ, to be the day-to-day commander. Trump also signed an executive memorandum authorizing Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth to mobilize 800 National Guardsmen with Secretary of the Army Daniel Driscoll, a former Army Ranger and Iraq War veteran, in charge of those troops. For an initial 30 days and likely far longer, the capital city of a supposed democracy with a huge working class population will be under the equivalent of martial law. Instead of a constitutional separation of powers with checks and balances, the Congress, the Supreme Court, and every other government institution will become part of the personal fiefdom of Trump, a political gangster who openly seeks the violent suppression of all opposition to his rule. This action sends a political signal not only to the entire United States, but to the world. The country, which long boasted of its rule as the first democratic republic, is now ruled by a would-be dictator who is seeking a violent confrontation with his political opponents and, above all, with the working class. Trump's fascist allies on every continent will be emboldened. The workers of the world must be forewarned and prepare politically in accordance with the dimensions of the threat. Trump announced the federal takeover of Washington in the course of a 90-minute press conference which combined fascistic rants and endless self-praise from the president and nauseating flattery from his minions. These included Bondi, Hegseth, FBI Director Kash Patel, and U.S. Attorney of the District of Columbia, Jeanine Pirro, all experienced bootlickers of Trump from their years at Fox News. In one particularly ominous remark, Trump said that Hegseth would contact state governors about providing troops from their National Guard forces if this was necessary to enforce emergency rule in Washington. He also hinted that combat military personnel might be deployed in the Capitol as well, citing the model of Los Angeles, where 500 heavily armed U.S. Marines were stationed in support of the widespread raids to round up immigrant workers for deportation. Trump delivered an obscenity-laden rant to justify the military police mobilization, declaring, quote, "Our capital city has been overtaken by violent gangs and bloodthirsty criminals, roving mobs of wild youth, maniacs, and homeless people. We're getting rid of the slums where they live." He vilified the homeless repeatedly, calling them very dirty, threatening they would all be driven out of the city to unspecified locations, and declaring, quote, "They will not be allowed to turn our capital into a wasteland for the world to see." No American president has ever used such language to describe the population of his country. Trump's words express more than the racial bigotry and hatred of the working class imbibed in the course of his rise through the netherworlds of Manhattan real estate, casino gambling, reality television, and other corporate swindles. He is steeped in the worldview of Adolf Hitler, his favorite author, whose speeches were a regular feature of his bedside table, according to his first wife, Ivana. In Nazi Germany, homeless people were categorized as, quote, asocials, and targeted for persecution. The Nazis considered them unproductive members of society and a burden on the state, at odds with their drive for racial purity and social regimentation. In America, immigrants, Muslims, and other minorities join the Jews in the demonology of fascism, but the methods are the same. combining fanatical hatred of socialism and Marxism, racialist scapegoating to disguise the fundamental class divisions in society, and increasingly open violence against all social and political opposition. Trump wants an America that will be comfortable with the super rich and the most affluent sections of the middle class, made possible through brutal class oppression carried out against the working class, while society is cleaned of the most visible victims of that class war. Washington, D.C. is a third major mobilization of military force within the United States this year, first at the U.S.-Mexico border, then in Los Angeles, and now in the nation's capital. And it is not to be the last. Trump and his other officials emphasized at the White House press conference that similar measures were planned for Chicago, New York, and other U.S. cities. Trump is making use of the peculiar legal status of the District of Columbia, a federal territory with limited self-rule and no voting representation in Congress, as a screen for his imposition of dictatorship. Under the 1973 D.C. Home Rule Act, the president has the authority to take control of the Washington police for up to 30 days, after which Congress must vote on any continuation. But there is no such limit on the use of National Guard troops, whether drawn from the population of the district or any other state, or on the use of the regular military forces. Trump's latest executive orders follows a carefully worked out plan. An internal memo from the Department of Homeland Security, obtained by the New Republic and made public in its August 2nd issue, details the efforts to normalize the use of federal troops within the United States. Authored by Philip Hegseth, the younger brother of the Defense Secretary and a senior advisor to DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, quote, "It suggests that the DHS is anticipating many more uses of the military in urban centers, noting that LA-style operations may be needed for years to come," end of quote. According to the magazine, a July 21st meeting between the DHS and Pentagon officials discussed coordinated action, quote, "in defense of the homeland." Those attending included Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, General Dan Kane, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and General Gregory Gouillot, Commander of NORTHCOM, which controls U.S. military forces operating across North America. What is most remarkable about the present situation is that Trump is carrying out the step-by-step erection of a fascist dictatorship in plain view, in real time, without any resistance from the institutions and organizations that supposedly uphold the principles of constitutional democracy. The Democratic Party has done nothing to oppose Trump's dictatorship. Congressional Democrats issued only the most perfunctionary statements against Trump's takeover of the U.S. Capitol, where Trump won only 6.5% of the vote in November 2024. Local officials like Mayor Muriel Bowser confined themselves to complaining that Trump was distorting the crime figures in the city and had not consulted with them before declaring the state of emergency. The content of the Democratic Party critique was to claim that Trump's actions were a, quote, diversion, an attempt to, quote, change the subject from the economic failures, social attacks, and myriad scandals of his second term. They speak as though oblivious to the fact that their own members of Congress will be going to work in offices patrolled by soldiers and police directed by Trump, the same president who on January 6, 2021, dispatched armed rioters to attack the Capitol. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer and other Senate Democrats have proposed a response that includes blocking Republican legislation, legal challenges, which means accepting as the ultimate authority the Supreme Court, packed with fascists, one-third of them chosen by Trump, and speeches at committee hearings and public protests. In other words, they will wring their hands impotently as American democracy is systematically destroyed. When the roles were reversed and Democratic President Joe Biden held office with narrow Democratic majorities in the House and the Senate, the Republican minority was able to block any significant measures to alleviate the deepening social crisis. The Democrats had only one priority they were willing to fight for: instigating, continuing, and escalating the US-NATO war with Russia in Ukraine. With a Republican in the White House and equally narrow Republican majorities in the House and Senate, Trump enacts his full program with impunity, He has pushed massive tax cuts for the wealthy through Congress, paid for in part by $1 trillion in social cuts, while issuing an unprecedented battery of executive orders to lock up immigrants, fire federal workers, and destroy social programs like education, healthcare, and environmental protection. As for the unions, which still nominally enlist more than 14 million workers, their leaders will not lift a finger. In the early days of the labour movement, one of the functions of unions was to defend the democratic rights of their members, including their right to strike, to organise independently of the bosses, and to oppose police military attacks. The unions of today are incapable of any such action, having been transformed into paid instruments of corporate management, an industrial police force in all but name. While the Democrats and the unions run and hide or seek to accommodate the aspiring dictator, the working class is on a collision course with the Trump administration. The provocations by ICE thugs in Los Angeles and other cities have already provoked a hostile response. The escalating attacks on democratic rights, public services and workers' living standards make a political explosion inevitable. The fascist in the White House senses this, hence his uncontrollable outburst denouncing socialism and the, quote, left. The Socialist Equality Party warns that the working class cannot rely on any of the worm-eaten institutions of American capitalism. Workers must take industrial action to oppose Trump's dictatorial measures. This means strike action in industry, transport, and by government workers themselves, one-third of whom are, quote, organized, that is, forced to pay dues to organizations that do nothing to defend them. The first step in such a campaign is to establish rank-and-file committees in factories, warehouses, offices and other workplaces, independent of the existing unions and the Democratic Party. The defense of democratic rights requires the creation of a new political power. It is bound up with the establishment of independent organizations of working-class struggle and the building of a mass independent political movement of the working class. At least one worker dead, 10 injured in massive explosion at US steel plant in Pennsylvania. London Gurov, Kevin Reed, August 11, 2025. If you have information on the Clareton Coke explosion or other workplace fatalities, contact us using the form at the end of this article on the World Socialist website. On Monday, a massive explosion ripped through a U.S. steel coking plant in Clareton, Pennsylvania, killing at least one worker and injuring 10 others. One worker remains unaccounted for, and residents nearby have been ordered to shelter indoors. The victim's family identified the worker killed as 39-year-old Timothy Quinn, a father of three who lived in Fitzhenry, a town southeast of Clareton. The Clareton Coke Works, owned by U.S. Steel, now a subsidiary of Nippon Steel, employs nearly 1,400 workers. It produces coke, a high-carbon form of coal used in steelmaking. Located 15 miles southeast of Pittsburgh on the Monongahela River, the 392-acre facility is the largest coke producer in North America. The explosion struck the facility just before 11 a.m. Monday, with video showing a blast inside the plant, followed by a towering plume of thick black smoke. A steel worker described the blast to local reporters as so loud, he first thought two trains had hit each other head-on. Workers at a nearby deli said the explosion was so powerful it blew the shop doors open. The explosion occurred in the facility's coke batteries, 13 and 14. Coke batteries are ovens that heat coal without oxygen to drive off impurities. While the specific cause of the coke battery explosion is not yet known, signs point to the possibility that pipes erupted from gas pressure accumulation. One worker on Reddit commented, quote, 1315 battery was old as hell and had a poor track record of maintenance, and that was when I worked there a decade ago, end of quote. Rescue crews have launched a major search and recovery operation at the Clairton Coke Works after the blast sparked a fire and caused extensive structural damage. More than 20 EMS agencies and 14 fire departments responded alongside the plant's own fire and medical teams. The 10 injured workers were rapidly triaged and sent to local hospitals, including UPMC Mercy, Allegheny General, Forbes and Jefferson, which treated the victims for trauma and burns. The rescue effort has been focused on finding and freeing any workers trapped beneath the rubble in and around the damaged coke ovens. The operation is now centred on locating the last unaccounted for worker. Teams are working with extreme caution as parts of the coke battery structure remain unstable and utility hazards persist at the site. The Allegheny County Health Department is monitoring air quality and urging residents within a mile to stay indoors, close windows and doors, and set HVAC systems to recirculate air. While officials report no dangerous toxin levels so far, community concern remains high due to the plant's long record of pollution incidents. Despite the ongoing danger, plant operations outside the affected batteries have been allowed to continue, even as the cause of the explosion remains unknown and the investigation is expected to take days or weeks. The Clairton Coke Works has a long record of deadly accidents. On September 3, 2009, an explosion killed 32-year-old Nicholas Rivetta and injured a nearby contractor. Less than a year later, on July 14, 2010, another blast injured 20 workers, four critically. In both cases, the cause was traced to gas leaks from lines running through the coke batteries. Pennsylvania, historically the center of the U.S. steel industry, leads the nation in steel plant injuries, according to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA. Since 2015, there have been 266 severe injuries, with 98 resulting in amputations. On average, one steel worker receives serious injuries every 2 weeks in the state. New heading, History of Class Struggle at Clairton. The Clairton Coke Works has been central to the U.S. steel industry and working class struggles for over a century. Built by U.S. Steel in 1916 as what was then the nation's largest and most advanced byproduct coke plant, it transformed steelmaking by centralizing coke production, a vital component in the process. The Great Depression formed the backdrop to major class battles at Clairton in the 1930s. Despite efforts by the Roosevelt administration to contain the eruption of class conflict through reforms, a movement of unorganized workers in the industrial centers of the Midwest broke out as part of the Congress of Industrial Organizations, CIO movement. The Clairton Coke Works became a flashpoint in these struggles. On September 26, 1933, roughly half of the steel workers at the plant joined striking coal miners to shut down production. More than 3,000 steel workers joined 4,000 miners to demand union representation, better wages and safer working conditions. The work stoppage was denounced by the pro-capitalist national union officials, who feared the political implications of the strike. Nevertheless, the workers at Clairton held firm, even as they clashed with company guards and state police. Later in the 1960s, workers and residents in Clairton began demanding protection from the cocktail of toxic gases, benzene, arsenic, lead, mercury, sulfur dioxide and more, emitted by the plant. Moreover, by mid-century, the facility's sprawling batteries and outdated equipment had created an environment where accidents, fires and leaks were constant threats. An epidemiological study by the University of Pittsburgh, funded by the National Cancer Institute, found that coke oven workers in Allegheny County had lung cancer rates roughly 2.5 times higher than other steel workers. The increased risk was even more dramatic for workers operating atop the ovens, where exposure to raw coking fumes was greatest. For those with 15 years or more in this role, nearly 1 in 3 died of lung cancer. Other outcomes included severe eczema and respiratory disease. Such efforts helped force the US government to establish the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, in 1970, which implemented strict coke oven emission standards and other regulations. Beginning in the 1970s, all these gains, and many more won through decades of class struggle, were systematically betrayed by the United Steelworkers, USW as the union bureaucracy was transformed into an instrument of the corporations, working against the lives and living standards of workers. The Trump administration is currently engaged in a massive assault on whatever remains of corporate regulations. The federal government has also taken a direct role in the management of US Steel after it was sold to Nippon Steel earlier this year. New heading, America's Industrial Slaughterhouse. The explosion at Clairton Coke Works is part of an unending string of workplace fatalities and injuries across the country. This includes the death of Ronald Adams Sr., a 63-year-old Stellantis auto worker in southeastern Michigan who was crushed to death by a gantry crane on April the 7th. In June, 39-year-old steelworker Michael Dwayne Townsend was killed at his plant in Fairfield, Alabama, after a rail car he was riding struck another rail car. Townsend's wife passed away last year due to an illness, and his death leaves his four children without parents. In mid-July, 19-year-old Guatemalan immigrant Brian Natale Otoniel Canujoy was killed at Tina's Burrito plant in Vernon, California, after being sucked into a meat grinder while cleaning. On July 28, a 30-year-old worker in Willoughby, Ohio, was killed when a truck crashed into the machinery on which he was working. The day prior, King Jung-won, a 34-year-old South Korean contractor, was killed at the LG Energy Solutions lithium battery plant in Holland, Michigan, after being caught in between the frame and lifting mechanisms of a machine he was working on. He was crushed to death. At the time Won was working on the machine, it was supposed to have been disabled so he could work on it safely. On July the 30th, Dylan D. Danielson and his two children were killed after a massive explosion occurred at a Horizon biofuels plant in Fremont, Nebraska, due to dust accumulation and on-site storage of wood waste and alcohol-based materials. All these deaths were entirely preventable had basic safety measures been followed for machinery and worksite management. An investigation into the death of Ronald Adams Sr. has been launched by the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, the IWA-RFC, which has revealed that management bypassed lockout-tagout safety measures, something which directly led to Adams' death. On July the 27th, approximately 100 workers and youth attended a public hearing into Adams' death by the IWA-RFC in Detroit. At the meeting, a resolution was passed unanimously calling for, quote, an end to the cover-up of the ongoing industrial slaughter, end of quote. The resolution declared that Ronald Adams' death was not an isolated incident but part of a broader pattern of systemic corporate negligence and cover-up that is claiming the lives of hundreds of thousands of workers each year in the United States and around the world, end of quote. The resolution also called for expanding the Adams investigation to include the deaths of Antonio Gaston at the Toledo Jeep Complex, Kaysen Garcia at Tyson Foods, and Brayan Joy at Tina's Burritos, along with a demand to end the industrial slaughter of workers, the bipartisan attacks on workplace safety and social programs, and the call to build rank-and-file committees. The resolution concluded, quote, we therefore call on all workers in the United States and internationally to join the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees and take up the fight for a national and international movement to end the sacrifice of workers' lives and limbs on the altar of profit. The time has come to organize, to resist, and to reclaim the right to live and work in safety and dignity. The WSWS urges any workers with information on the Clairton Coke Works explosion or other workplace fatalities to contact us using the form below the article on the WSWS. For these articles and more, go to the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.